welcome back to Under the Abbey Stand. Another cheery episode for you coming up this week. We're going to look back at the trip to Stevenage, a little trip to Southend in the week, and then hosting Carlisle United as well. And then we'll look ahead to the next couple of games for Cambridge. Colchester and Mansfield, we'll dissect them. And then, of course, any other business in football, Jenga, and Bet of the Week with Tom. So plenty for you to dig your teeth into. We are joined by the usual suspects. Julian Roberts, welcome.
Hello, mate.
Looking very tanned.
Oh, thanks,
after
mate.
After your holiday. Tom Walker.
Hello.
How are you, mate?
Not so tanned.
Not so tanned, but ready to talk Cambridge United. And his second appearance on the pod, welcome back, Jordan Warland.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. I told myself yesterday morning that I'd be chirpier and more optimistic on the pod today, but then I watched the Carlisle game. Mm. So thanks for having me back.
This is going to be a real theme, isn't it?
Does that make you joint record guest appearance maker?
With Matt Ramsey?
And Andrew Jordan.
And Andrew Jordan.
God, you're so close to that record.
Oh, I want that record.
A hat trick.
We'll see. To be decided, but we're going to start in a bit of a happier time for Cambridge United. Last weekend saw a trip to Stevenage in that local derby, and it was good. 1-0 victory for Cambridge in that game.
I'm not a fan of calling it a derby.
Right.
They were doing it on Twitter, like the club was saying it was a derby, and they were doing it in like the news coverage, but I'm just not convinced. It's a derby game.
They're just trying to get any sort of hype around anything that they can at the moment. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like a derby. It's just an excuse for calling something, just having a bit of a special...
They mean nothing to me, and I'd like to think that maybe we mean something to them. So maybe it's a derby for Stevenage.
I like that.
Our superior complex. It's going to go downhill for the rest of the pod.
Yeah, it used to be one of them where we used to kind of just take a lot of fans, and it was seen by that, I think, as a bit of a derby, because we turned out quite well for it. That was not the case on Saturday. I think we had about 500 there, something like that. Probably a few more, actually.
There was a bit of uproar about pricing for away fans' tickets, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I think it was like £24 or something for like League Two football. It's mental. I think the worst thing was, I'm not sure, I could be wrong, I think it was quite significantly more expensive to go as an away fan than a home fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think was allowed, but yeah, I suppose worth the ticket money in the end.
Yeah. What was the feeling coming out of it? Was it just best performance of the season?
It was really kind of backs against the wall sort of stuff. Like kind of siege mentality around it. I thought it was a good performance. It was very cagey, especially in kind of the last 20 minutes. I'll be honest, I didn't think we'd hold out. First clean sheet of the season, which is always very welcome. And yeah, good 3 points on the road. It was a very good, you know, it was a good performance, good day out. In a way, it was good to see us, you know, take the lead in a game, first and foremost. Secondly, to take the lead in a game so early and actually see that out was really good. You know, it was a fantastic performance, and very happy to get a win.
It's also nice for us to capitalise on a goalkeeping error rather than be at the other end of a goalkeeping error for once.
It was poor goalkeeping, to be fair. Really well kept alive by Jabba Abire. Played you know his role very well. Obviously, as the kind of target man in that 4-2-3-1, which worked very well. And yeah, it was a good finish from Amu. Popping up at the back post, that's where wingers want to be. I always think, you know, if you're a winger and you're making that run to the back post, you're going to score like 5-10 goals a season by doing it. Like, it's worth doing, and you know, Amu's proved that, and he played very well. One of a number of players who, you know, put in a really good shift. I think probably my man of the match would have been Louis John, who was absolutely outstanding. I think it was. You know,
he's been very good. Every game that I've personally seen him in, he's looked very solid.
Yeah, he looked at Stevenage like a player who had a lot more Football League experience than what he's got. It looked like he'd made that step up really nicely. I know at Sutton, like even at Sutton, I don't think he was, out and out kind of centre back there. I think he was very much more kind of a versatile man, and he looked like he'd come into it as a real kind of seasoned professional. And he played really well at Stevenage. Good performance all round, and especially for those defenders getting that first clean sheet.
What did you think of Jake Carroll? Because I thought it was one of Carroll's best games in a United shirt. And I think actually we talk a lot about how poorly the defence has been doing this season. I think actually he's been fairly solid, and his sort of attacking outlets really improved this season as probably in his best run of form for the club since he joined.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Jack Carroll's been improving probably since maybe after Christmas time. You know, obviously last season. He's a player that gets a lot of stick, which I'm not sure is always fair, especially not at the moment, as you say. I think he's been playing quite well. I think certainly initially when he signed, he looked a little bit shaky and a little bit kind of out of sorts. Maybe it's just a settling in process, coming down from Hartlepool. He obviously came across from Ireland, I think, as well, earlier on in his career, so he's possibly still, adapting to life, kind of, I suppose, away from home. But yeah, he's been improving. I guess the idea when you play a guy like Jake Carroll and Brad Halliday is to have two very similar kind of attacking fullbacks. And yeah, like when he does that, he's very versatile, very kind of energetic moving forward. He's got a great tackle on him as well. He really likes to throw himself into challenges, which is always good to see. And yeah, I thought he played well at Stevenage, and hopefully continues to improve.
I thought the best thing about the Stevenage game was that we attacked the game and we attacked them really early, like from the start, which we've kind of not done home or away for most of the games this season. I thought we dealt with like the ugly stuff from Stevenage, like they were very one-dimensional going forward. I think we dealt with that really well, and we, for the first time, looked like we could control a game, we could control opponents. And yeah, it was back to the wall by the end, as you would imagine, being away from home and the home team chasing an equaliser. But I thought it was a pretty solid performance.
How much do you think of that comes down to the formation?
I don't think it's any coincidence that we switch back to that 4-2-3-1 and we win. I don't think that's a coincidence at all. Obviously we moved back to kind of a two up top. I think it was more of a flat 4-4-2 against Carlisle on Saturday. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that it kind of unravelled in the end there. I just think, it's interesting because, I said this on the Twitter account, why have we kind of played a 4-4-2 against Carlisle, which again we'll come on to later. And the reply that someone said to it was that, look, the problem is not playing two up top, it's not playing a diamond, it's not playing, a flat 4-4-2, whatever it is. The problem is playing a 4-4-2 with the strikers that we've got.
Yeah,
that's sort of proving the point that we're making, no?
Yeah, that you shouldn't
if
be playing 4-4-2.
If you don't have the personnel, why are you trying to play a system that kind of doesn't play to your strengths? And at Stevenage, we did exactly that. Like, I just think having that extra body in midfield just makes us look so much more solid. And
but like I said, that is where we're strongest.
Yeah.
Maris, Brown, Amu, probably three of our best players. So we play to their strengths rather than Adi Aziz.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, talking
about
him.
And when you've got options like Lamb and Dunk to come from the bench as well, like, yeah, we're much better suited for that formation. Like, I don't know what he was thinking, changing it to go 4-4-2 at Carlisle.
Mm. Well, I mean, talking of Aziz, we highlighted it before before recording that his decision making on the football pitch as a player seems to just be kind of whack. Like, he that chance at the end against Stevenage, cut inside, beating the keeper to the ball. Their keeper looked shocking, by the way, and then he just, he could have squared it for anyone.
He's done everything so well.
Yeah.
And he picks that really awkward finish rather than laying it off.
It was quite funny, actually, because obviously the Stevenage game took place just after Liverpool played Leicester. And it was almost like a carbon copy of that mistake that Alisson made.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look, we're talking about obviously Premier League players, but like the difference in decision making, like Aziz could have just slid it across.
Yeah.
I think it was a Beer waiting there. I think it was like on the edge of the 6-yard box. It would have been the tap in. And we said this about him, after Notts County, I think it was, the problem's not really been quality of kind of movement or anything like that. It's always been that decision making, like in the final third. There are times when his finishing isn't great, of course there are, but it is mainly that decision making, I think. It was kind of frustrating as well, because he'd done so well to get into that position, taking it off the keeper, driving into the box, and then, hitting the post, which was, I suppose, quite funny now looking back on it. But,
I would say the Stevenage one, the Aziz chance at Stevenage, is more forgiving in the sense that he's come on as a sub, obviously wants to make an impression, has done all that hard work, like the rush of blood to the head is like, I'm just going to finish this. It's more forgivable than, say, some of the other chances that have been pretty pretty standard kind of for a decent striker to finish, like there was one from 5 yards against Carlisle yesterday. Like, I think the Stevenage one is more forgiving, but the fact that it seems to happen every game just highlights the personnel issues that we have up top as a club at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that, because you almost want a striker to be selfish. Your striker to want his name on the score sheet, and especially Aziz is probably thinking, it's really important here that I stop getting my name on the score sheet, rather than, you know, an assist here and there, even though, I don't know, I just always think that a striker being selfish and going for goal can definitely be a good thing. But then again, like I say, decision making is a clear issue.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never dig out a striker for having a shot in that sort of situation. Like, he's won the ball off a goalkeeper, the goal is open, but like, the angle was so poor, it was so difficult to score from. And when the options are so obvious in front of you, like, you've got to do better. You've just got to look, like, pick your head up and try and throw the pass through, I suppose.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a good, a clean sheet's always good from Cambridge United point of view, especially away from home.
Ford was brilliant as well. Give Ford his credit at Stevenage, I thought was brilliant. And then I guess, I don't know, it's just that cliche, isn't it, that a week is a long time in football.
Like, yeah.
Last week, Ford was brilliant at Stevenage, ditto Louis John. Then you go to the Carlisle game and both had bad days at the office.
Let's talk about the Carlisle game. I mean, for the first 43 minutes of that game, I thought Cambridge United were pretty good value for money. You know, they looked dangerous when they were going forward. You know, they had a few chances. They could have been more than 1-0 up before Carlisle scored. And then they just went to sleep and conceded a ridiculous goal, right?
Yeah, it was soft, wasn't it? Like, it was really soft. No, it was a strange goal, actually. It was a strange kind of move that led to it. I don't think Maris, like, misplaced the pass. He just seemed to lose the ball.
Yeah, you know, it was
seemed to lose all control of it. Like, tried to make a pass and he, like, kicked it off his own foot. You know, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's almost like, you know, we said it last week, like, just, we might as well just clip what we said, like, after Cheltenham, what we said after Newport and Exeter as well. Like, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And I saw someone say it on I can't remember what sort of platform it was, but someone said something on the lines of, like, the most frustrating thing isn't losing, it's that we're beating ourselves rather than being beaten by, like, decent opposition who are, like, beating us because they're better than us. I think that's something that you can always accept. Like, you know, we've played teams in the past where they've just beaten us because they're a better team and they've just been better on the day. But when, like, repeatedly just shooting ourselves in the foot, beating ourselves, like, we're doing their job for them by conceding these kind of sloppy goals. I mean, the one against Carlisle, the first goal, the equaliser, it wasn't as much of a calamity as, say,
the two against Exeter,
yeah. But it's just that. I mean,
thing is, when Maris lost the ball, I just looked at it, I was like, this is fine. We've got players back, keepers in an all right position. We should deal with this.
He shouldn't have won that header, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the fact that Louis John hasn't won that header in the air, and Ford
seems to loop quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it took forever to just fall into the net, and then, I don't know, maybe I'm being critical of Ford, but I really feel like he could have busted gut to get over and attempt to save it somehow.
One of the lads you were stood with, Tom, made that point. Like, Ford had time to turn his body and look towards the top corner and see the ball hitting the back of the net. I think he didn't even make an attempt to get across to it.
Yeah. This home form is something that is starting to become a real issue. So obviously we've lost the last four at home on the trot. Scored 2, conceded 9. But then what's even more worrying about that is if you look at the next 3 that we've got at home, it's Mansfield, Forest Green and MK, all of which are in the top 9 at the very least.
Yeah, so yeah.
And like last year, the Abbey was kind of a fortress, really. I can't remember how many we lost at home last year, but it wasn't a lot. So to have lost 4 by the 8th of September, that's relegation form. That's worrying. Like, if you can't get points at home, that's a concern.
Yeah, again, it's not even being able to get points off, like, Cheltenham and Carlisle. At the very least, you should be picking up a draw there. And we've said before, like, this league, it's not one where you have to be, like, outstanding to get promoted. Like, there have been outstanding teams in this league before who have been promoted, like, you know, your Portsmouths and etc. But, you know, you look back through the years since we've come up, and like, the teams that have been getting promoted haven't been like really dazzling football teams with like amazing squads. They've been teams who just consistently pick up points over the course of the season. And it's like, this is the difference between us and, you know, a team that we'll probably challenge at the moment, is that yesterday you're 2-1 down, you nick a goal, Cheltenham, same thing, and you're ticking over, picking up points. Like, if we were sat here, having beaten Stevenage away and drawn at home to Carlisle, I feel we'd be sat here saying that's a pretty decent return, really.
Yeah.
Like, 4 points from two games which, let's be honest, we were sat in here recording after the Cheltenham game. I don't think we were confident of getting anything.
Yeah.
We've got three as it is, but it's almost like we give ourselves a bit of a platform to build on and then shoot ourselves in the foot again. It was the same against Notts County. We beat them. And I think, you know, we got battered by, was it Newport just after that?
Newport.
You know, and then...
Yeah, like, credit to Carlisle. Like, they absolutely dominated the second half and they were decent and they had chances to get a third or a fourth. They missed probably some that they should have put away. But the first half, I think there was a period between, like, the 15th and the 30th minute where I think we were really, really good. Maris Brown finding space, like, angling passes, Ibire's hold-up play, just everything was sticking to him. It's just the fact that we didn't get that second goal. We've not killed anyone off. And that's, okay, you know, understandable maybe that we didn't get the second goal, but, like, just such a soft kind of underbelly to this team that the moment we go behind, we had no idea what to do to get back into it.
No,
they've got no bottle.
No bottle. There was no determination. There was no, well, the plan Joe Dunn's plan B is a pretty horrific plan B. Like, we were talking before about how the subs didn't really make any difference, and that's coming from someone who loves Barry Corr, but, like, just throwing Ibire and Corr up top just wasn't going to work.
I thought it was a really weird substitution. Like, I really thought that Dunn made some interesting decisions against Carlisle. That sub to take Aziz off for Corr, you're left with Ibire and Corr up front.
Yeah.
You know, at the best of times, there's not a lot of movement there. There's not a lot of energy. Like, Ibire for me had quite a poor game. I thought he should have been taken off anyway. But if you're taking Aziz off, who is essentially your movement and your energy going forward, and replacing him with Corr, who, you know, we all know has had injury problems, and his fitness is not anywhere near what it once was. Like, you can't do that. And at the most basic levels, it's two pretty similar players, really.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, you know.
Well, just going back to this point about bottle and how convincing we are as a squad. I don't know if you've seen Joe Dunn's quote after the Carlisle game. So, this is courtesy of Matt Ramsey on Twitter. Sometimes you look into a player's eyes and you see dead eyes. That concerns me. Not just for football, but other reasons. When you live with disappointment, it sticks with you. It's like tar. How hard is tar to get off your skin? The quicker you can put disappointment to the back of your head and move on to the next. We sometimes wallow in our disappointment when we're so much better than that. At the moment, it's costing us. We've got to get out. Sharpish.
Wow.
I bet Joe Dunn listens to the Smiths. I reckon he loves Morrissey and the Smiths, and that's his drive home on a Saturday evening.
It's pretty annoying he's not listening to this, really.
Yeah. That's pretty scathing.
but he's right. I just think as a team, we just seem to be so fragile, like, mentally, that, you know, mistakes happen and people miss tackles, and I don't know how we get over this. Like, is Greg Taylor coming back going to solve any of this? I feel like we are putting a lot of hope in that, like, that basket there.
Also, if we don't have the outright quality player for player, you made this point last week actually, Tom, then you have to rely on character to some extent. And then if you lose character,
you've not got a lot.
We've got nothing. That's there's no football team left anymore. This
a point on yesterday connected to all this is I've been to the Abbey, you know, tens to hundreds of times.
Sometimes on the pitch.
We'll come to that later. But I'd never felt the atmosphere so flat as it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's strange. It's so strange at the moment. I think, you know, last season, I think when we were kind of recording this, we were saying how when we kind of initially started, we were saying how it's a bit of a strange situation for the club at the moment. Like, in recent years, we've been absolutely terrible, you know, down the bottom of the conference, or we've been brilliant, getting promoted, playing Man United, etc., etc. Everything's just a bit flat at the moment.
Yeah.
But yesterday was, like, the best example of that, or the worst example of that, I suppose. The ground, when the goal went in, and, you know, full time, it was just, like, apathy. Like, it wasn't. People weren't angry, like, but people weren't booing.
There was no booing, there was no people yelling at players as they were going off. It was just this eerie, that worrying silence.
That for me worries
club.
Me more than if the ground had, you know, like, if it had just exploded with boos at the full time whistle. That worries me more that people just don't seem to care. And, like, the thing is, like, I understand it as well. Like, I feel that as well. And the worrying thing, really, I suppose, is that there's guys who have, you know, we know of plenty of guys who have been season ticket holders now at Cambridge for, you know, decades, basically. They're not renewing. like they move away, they've got other stuff on Saturdays, or you know, more important things to do and stuff. Like previous times, like, they'd have renewed no matter what, and it just feels like the way that the club's kind of been distanced, I suppose, from the fans over the last few years is really starting to kind of come home now, and it's resulting in this, and it's not good, is it?
It's very true. If you look at, I mean, you can look at averages from the first four home games of last season to this season, and it has gone down by almost 100 from, I know that's not a massive number, but it tells you something that if you're looking at like Coventry at home was 5,000, Colu was over with 4.5, fine, Carlisle was 4, and that was the first game of the season. But there's a difference also in, if you remember those games, I remember it being bouncing, even if the home, even if we've had as many home fans this season as we had last season. I do remember that games like Colu at home, that game, that 1-1, I remember that being that was a quality game to be down the Abbey for. And then this season, I've had it once. Think about that Cheltenham game, Bank Holiday Saturday, 3,500. That worries me.
Yeah, it's a weird one, and to be there was very odd. You know, the start of the game, it felt kind of like eerie, like you say, is the best description. So it'll be interesting to see if Cambridge can kind of pull this back as a club, and you know, get out of this, because they're in a bit of a mire at the moment.
Let's also make this point: we are only 7 games in.
Yeah,
we're highlighting problems that are very clear, but I don't want to be a relegation Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Look, we've had worse starts. Two years ago under Sean Derry, where we didn't get any wins till the end of September. I don't know. I think what makes it more worrying as a fan this time round is all the stuff that came out sort of April time about the finances and the fact that we can all see that we've got problems on the field. We can see that our problems stem for our centre backs and the lack of decent options back there and the lack of decent options up top. And I think the difference this time round, as opposed to the last couple of seasons, is we're not going to throw money away in the loan market or get some emergency sort of signings like we have done under Derry in the last sort of couple of years. And I think maybe that is what is leading to that kind of sort of apathy that we mentioned, is this kind of worry of, we can see what the problem is, but we also can see that there's no quick way out. Like, there's no way to buy our way out of this. We're just going to have to put all our hopes into this group of players and into Joe Dunn and the management team to sort of get some motivation and some form out of these guys.
A lot is going to have to change to really excite a lot of marginal Cambridge United fans who really don't want to go. And if they're looking at these results, especially these home, and they're largely going to be the people that will go to one or two home games every couple of months.
Yeah.
If the team's playing well, they'll follow the results and stuff. But they're the people that are really going to boost your crowd. They're the marginal people. Maybe we're the second team.
Yeah. If you look at Dunn's comments from yesterday in his match post-match interview, I can't remember which quote it is. He talks about there, for the first time, he mentions, we've got like this side until January. So I think that's kind of the first inkling for me that he's kind of maybe admitting that actually perhaps we should have got an extra body or two in during the opportunity, and maybe he's now thinking ahead to sort of January about what he can do to sort of improve things. But you know, that's a long way off. There's a lot of games and a lot of points between the window opening again.
Yeah, I mean, since the last time that we've spoken, obviously the transfer window shut, hasn't it? And or the soft transfer window, or whatever it was. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I don't know if I'm just the only one, but I feel a little bit let down they've not brought anyone in.
Yeah,
one point I want to make. Seen something on the Cambridge United message board, and we said it last week. Like, if the money's not there, sometimes like the job, like the board of directors, is to invest money. Mm-hmm. One of the former directors put something quite interesting on the message board that when he was on the board, I think he was on as the fans elected director. When he was on the board, it was like a requirement to invest at least $25,000 a year.
Yeah.
For a director. I don't think that's the case anymore. Like, there are people on the board of directors who aren't investing. Like, does that seem mad? Am I alone in thinking that it's a little bit crazy that they're not putting money in to bring anyone in? Or no, I don't know. Perhaps that's harsh. Perhaps that's
no, no. I think you're right.
I think maybe what could lift the atmosphere around the club would maybe be better lines of communication from the board, CFU and their representation and the fans. Like, let's know what's what's going on, what's happening behind the scenes. Like, what are we doing with the money? Like, are we not spending the money on loan players so that we can offer our better players new contracts? Like, Giovanni signed one last week. You know, what is going on? I think, you know, putting like all your cards on the table, I think that will help kind of lift the mood amongst, you know, everyone, like the fans, and it will kind of get everyone more on side.
Yeah, I think I'll probably agree with that. I think honesty is the best policy in this one. Right, that brings us to the end of the first part. Coming up, we're going to look at the trip to Colchester, the visit of Mansfield, and I'll tell you a little bit about my day at the Abbey Stadium on the pitch.
It is the finest of lines and margins.
Coming up in part two, we're going to look at the trip to Colchester and hosting Mansfield at the Abbey. So what do we think about Colchester? That's not a derby, is it?
Definitely not. Also, we're going to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't fancy our chances in the CUFC mini-league this season, considering we've lost to Carlisle already.
Yeah, good point. Colchester are doing quite well. They're in fifth at the moment. And they've only lost once all season, actually. So, yeah, they're doing pretty well. And they're going to be up there and thereabouts this season, I imagine, aren't they?
Yeah, Colchester were one that we tipped to do quite well. At the start of the season, they made, you know, some decent additions. They brought Harry Pell in, who scored on Saturday. I think it was Tranmere that they played. A good point up there. Luke Norris from Swindon and Frank Noble as well from Newport. They look like a much better outfit this year. We said like this is probably going to be the year that they're going to start to kick on. They're always a side that have a bit of promise since they've come down. Like they have some exciting players like Sammy Schmodix is always good. It just felt like us really. They just needed that extra few bodies through the door to help them push on to the next level when they've brought them in, and they look like a really good outfit this year. I'm slightly concerned about Saturday. It feels like there's been a lot of errors creeping into our game, and at some point someone's going to make a real, you know, they're really going to tear us to pieces, and I just wonder whether this Saturday might be one of those.
You made quite an ominous prediction before the podcast.
I said it could be quite Luton-ish. I don't think it'll be that bad, but I think that Colchester will beat us, and I think they could do it quite handsomely.
They're also 21-20 with Sky Bet.
Yep, 21-20 with Sky Bet. So, you know, just a shade above evens. That will be going on my accumulator on Saturday.
God, that's good, isn't it? You know, you always know it's bleak when you're betting against your own team.
Either way, you're happy.
What about Greg Taylor? He's on the bench against Carlisle. Do you reckon Colchester will be too soon to throw him back in the starting lineup, or?
I'm not sure, but you need to get him back in there as soon as possible, really. Mm. It just looks like... I'm not sure who I'd take out, actually, to put him back in.
Taft, yeah. Maybe?
Yeah?
Yeah. Louis John's definitely shown himself over a couple of games. In general, on the whole, he's been a standout at the back. Granted, one clean sheet. But...
yeah.
I think with the guidance of someone like Greg Taylor next to him, I think that could be a formidable partnership.
Would you consider going three at the back to just try and shore things up even more? Like, let's put all three of them on there. You've got good wing-back options in Carroll and Halliday. Obviously, it then kind of sort of restricts your sort of wide players further up the top. But, are we getting so desperate to stop these defensive sort of... slip-ups which have happened in every game except for the Stevenage one? Like, do we need like a drastic new way of thinking about it? Do we need an extra body there to...
Wasn't this something that we tried at the end of last season?
I have a vague memory.
I've got a memory of us playing.
I feel like we probably like have tried it. Yeah.
Three at the back with Cambridge United is always something which makes me a little bit nervous. Like, we tried it under Richard Money in that summer when we signed a lot of quite high earning players. And it didn't really work.
Do you remember in the conference we tried it and we had Courtney Pitt as a wing back? Was that before?
Yeah,
was it John Brady on the other side or something like that? Brody? I can't remember his name.
John Brady. It was John Brady.
Yeah.
We tried it under Jimmy Quinn, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, obviously it worked quite well then. I think with regards to Colchester, I think it's something that's worth trying. As we say, we're pretty worried that we might get beat there. I think from my perspective, you've got to shore it up one way or another, whether that's going 4-2-3-1 again or whether that's maybe trying a three at the back, something like that. It's just I'm really, really fed up of trying to play this like 4-4-2. Whether it's in
minimum
a diamond,
is going back to 4-2-3-1 minimum.
It'd be interesting to see what the attendance is like, what we bring here.
Are you suggesting that it might be fairly poorly attended by Cambridge United fans?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's not much to be, you know, happy about going.
It just goes back to that motivation from a fan's point of view to go and watch a game of football. If there's, you know, someone like Tom's making a prediction like that, you're half-arsed Cambridge United fans, not exactly going to be motivated to go and spend 20-odd quid.
Yeah, don't listen to me. Don't listen to me. What I meant by Luton-ish was that we're probably going to go there and win like we did that time when Rory McCauley scored the header.
So, go
along.
Well saved.
Go along, yeah. I hope that that's believable a little bit.
Look, we'll get a draw there and then we'll smash Mansfield at home.
Yeah, see. Saturday the 22nd of September, Cambridge United Mansfield at the Abbey.
Just one thing on that kind of motivation point. I don't think our game was one of them, but did you see they started to stream Football League games online?
Yeah.
That's not going to help, is it?
Yeah, that was weird. But, like, they announced it, like, just under the radar. Mm-hmm. And, like, apparently our mate, the Carlisle fan, Clarkey, was saying the Accrington chairman didn't know about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's like, where I saw it, because he was on Twitter. He was tweeting EFL about it. And his point is very valid, that it's an international weekend, so you're going to get a lot of fans of Premier League clubs without a game to go to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so the
aim
is that they're going to end up going to watch a Football League match. But then if you're just making it free online, you can just sit in your pants and watch it at home.
Yeah,
I think it costs £10 a stream. Because I actually streamed it for the Exeter game. But again, like this is exactly what I'm saying. Like for me, if that service wasn't there, I probably would have made the effort to go. But because it's there, it's like I can get in, I can sit at home, watch it, have like tea while I'm watching it or something, like rather than trekking to Cambridge, watching it and watching us lose 2-0. Specifically for a club like Accrington, like where they're located, you know, the amount of sort of Premier League teams around them, it's, you know, I don't know the figures, I don't know whether there's like an actual correlation, but I would imagine Accrington's biggest attendances over the last few years have been on international weekends when like Burnley, Man United, Blackburn, all these like fans are just going down because they want a game to watch. And for us, it's not so much of an issue because we don't have, you know, we're not surrounded by Premier League clubs, but Cambridge is a city that unfortunately is full of Spurs and Arsenal fans.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
So,
yeah,
you know, yeah. But yeah, you know, from my perspective, it's just something that for a club like Cambridge, where again, like your marginal fans, like they're your money makers. Like we're always going to have, I think, a solid core of probably minimum like 2,000 fans who will just go to games. Rain, you know, rain, win, lose, draw, whatever. So that's fine. Like that money's there. That's always going to be there. But the way that this club makes money is by getting those marginal fans in. And when there's an option to spend, I don't know, what is it, 20 quid for a ticket to the NRE or whatever, you know, travel, food, all this sort of stuff, like you're talking like at least like £40 a day, something like that. And
more
you can just
that.
Sit at home. And especially
least,
if the football on offer isn't great and the atmosphere is dead as it is, like, You're not gonna do it.
No, exactly.
You're just not gonna do it. So you know, I just wanted to see what people's, you know, what your kind of opinions were on it, really, because it's something that I think could be potentially a little bit.
Well, it's a fine line because I think iFollow as a service for fans abroad.
It's fantastic. Is
fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, brilliant. If I lived abroad, I would subscribe to it and I'd be very happy to have it there. But I don't see the reasoning for why it should be made available to fans in the UK, and the way it correlates with an international weekend just feels like malicious in some sense. There's also, isn't there a 3 p.m. blackout for football? Is that just,
I think it's, if it's actually like being like broadcast on like Sky or something like
right
that.
Yeah.
There is though yeah. It's just,
there's something sacred.
It feels
about
a little bit weird,
the Saturday
doesn't it?
Yeah. at 3 o'clock that we shouldn't be touching. Like I get,
absolutely.
I get like, yeah, like you're saying, having it as a subscription for those outside of the UK, and maybe having it for like your Tuesday nights because most people aren't going to travel on a Tuesday night. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of sort of trying to push the Football League, especially like the lower parts of the Football League, League Two and League One, into this kind of like other sort of footballing world where like the Prem is, where like most people watch via streams, you know, you go on Reddit on a Sunday and it's just full of where can I get the latest streams from. And I don't know, I just it doesn't sit right with me, because I feel like League 2 and League 1 is something different, and it's more about the being there, and it's
It's different entirely, like just from like a financial perspective. There was a kind of like a report came out, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, talking about kind of TV money and stuff. And there were, I think it was Leicester made like quite a significant profit before like ticket money and stuff, because so like with the Premier League, like they don't really need fans coming to the stadiums like, as much, because their money all comes in through like massive TV deals and like sponsorships and stuff. Like we're still very much like a small club. Like everyone in League 2 is the same, everyone in League 1 is the same, most in the Championship are the same. Like they don't have like,
Can't most Prem clubs survive without ticket sales? On the money that they get from,
I think it came through
revenue.
I think it was about 13 Premier League clubs can survive, so for things like that, like it's fine, but there's actually a genuine issue that it might like actually harm clubs.
Which makes the ticket price in the Premier League even more mental when they're not even like absolutely necessary for the survival.
Do you remember a couple of years ago a former CEO of Cambridge United said that we were very close to surviving without match day income?
How'd that go?
What was that, a mere 18 months ago?
Do you know what, looking back on that is actually it's like gallows humour, isn't it? You can almost look back on it and just think like I can't believe they came out with that sort of stuff. I can't believe they started saying that, like that sort of thing, and like it all went so spectacularly tits up.
Well, actually, maybe we should be backing iFollow, because we're big in China with all our Chinese connections. That we'll be making billions from being streamed in the Far East.
Some pub in Beijing have like a big screen up. Like all the, you know, Chinese people in their Cambridge United shirts.
A big bust of Joe Dunn as you walk in.
Throwing bottles of Sing Sao around or whatever. Going mental when, you know, Louis John clears off the line or whatever. Maybe, you know, we're massive in China, aren't we, these days?
Marvin Amoos, big in
Beijing. That's interesting. Speaking of that former CEO of Cambridge United, he's rocked up at Lincoln, hasn't he?
It's
on a consultant. It's a bit odd, actually, because I think he's doing exactly the same thing for them as he is for us.
Doing that for us?
Yeah, he's still doing the consulting, he's still doing the China stuff. I think he might have something to do with the new ground or development or whatever's going on there. He seems to have just set up like a bit of a consultancy company, and he's doing that for everyone.
It'd be interesting to see if his effect at Lincoln is the same effect that Sean Derry's had at Oxford.
Well, Mark Tracy's there as well, isn't he, at Lincoln? Yeah. Like, the worst scout ever. Just terrible. Like, I can't think of... Jez's mate, so.
Was it Jez that nearly got the Cowley brothers in before that, Sean Derry?
To be fair, I think rumour has it, or, you know, people speculate that Jez pushed quite hard to get Cowley's in instead of Sean Derry, which, so, you know, to his credit, really.
The rumour I heard, and you guys can clarify this in a few weeks, but wasn't it Max Rushton that put a call in on Derry's behalf saying, check this guy out, I know him through working with him, he'd be a good manager.
It was, and I'm absolutely buzzing to berate him for that phone call.
Yeah, that's going to
be just on that, we've got an episode coming out with Max Rushton. We'll be recording with him, so obviously any questions, anything like that, send them in to us.
So we're recording on Tuesday the 25th, so get them into us before then.
September
the 25th.
Cool. Yeah, we'll chat about everything. We'll chat about how he managed to kind of set us up with Sean Derry for nearly 3 years. So cheers for that. We'll talk about
he's been in the news this week, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been getting absolutely rinsed on social media as well this week, because he's, you know,
two club wanker.
Yeah, two club wanker. So we'll be going through that. We'll be talking about
Jack goes quiet over there.
Yeah,
he's like five teams.
I have allegiance to one team, and it's a Cambridge United, of course. But yeah, so it'll be good to chat to Max. We're not going to berate him the whole time. We'll be nice to him for some of it as well. We'll just save the real killer questions to the end. That's going to be good.
Mansfield,
of course.
Let's talk about Mansfield.
So this is maybe...
That was a bit of a tangent. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it kind of did.
So Mansfield beat Carlisle last week. So by that theory, I've got draw written down as maybe optimistic in my prediction.
Jordan, can you just quickly go through your September predictions? Because raised my...
All right, so to be fair, Stevenage was a win, and we got that. I had... Yesterday, the Carlisle game down as a draw. I had to lose next week to Colchester. I've got us down to draw against Mansfield, and then we finish the month against Newport, where we all know that we never beat Newport. So
yeah,
I've got that down as a loss.
Cambridge United's bogey side, Newport.
So I was predicting 5 points this month. We're currently on three.
Good.
not ideal then.
It'll be a tough month.
Mansfield didn't play yesterday. Their game with Crewe was postponed because of international duty.
Which sounds completely mental.
I'm outraged because we should have had yesterday off because we've not got Reggie Lamb. And if we had Reggie Lamb, we would have won.
Yeah, because Reggie Lamb's off playing
Aruba, which definitely sounds like a made-up country.
Hallam Hope, he was on international duty as well.
He scored, didn't he? He got two.
He's a good player.
He's not our player, though. So.
No, he's not. So Mansfield, well, maybe they'll be fresher. Maybe they'll be a bit rusty.
They're in an interesting position this season, Mansfield, because they've still got that squad that Evans put together, spent quite a lot of money on. It's still probably one of the best squads in the league, certainly one of the most expensive.
Who's in charge?
David Flitcroft.
Swindon.
The jury's still massively out on Flitcroft for me. Not only in his time at Mansfield, but he didn't really do much for Swindon. I think they were like ninth when he left. Again, spent quite a bit of money bringing in, you know, like Keshi Andersons and stuff at Swindon. Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one. I'm not sure if he's the guy to get the best out of that squad. But we'll see.
They are unbeaten in five.
Yeah. But the four of those were draws. Four draws and a win. So hope for Cambridge, I think. I think my heart of hearts tells me it's going to be a score draw. But I said that about yesterday and we lost.
Yeah.
I'd take a point.
Yeah. I'd always take a point.
Yeah.
Always take a point.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Cambridge United get on. Next time we record a podcast, it could be a joyous occasion or it could get seriously deep and dark. With Joe Dunn's comments now, imagine if we lose to Colchester and Mansfield.
Part of me is a little bit gutted that we didn't start recording this podcast like a little bit earlier on, as in we started it in February. Part of me is a little bit gutted that we didn't start in like the dark, deepest, darkest Derry days.
Yeah.
Alliteration.
Because all of the time we were recording this podcast last season, it was all quite sort of upbeat and everything was looking up.
We started at a turning point, didn't we?
Can you imagine if we'd have come in here on a Sunday after we lost 7-0 at Luton?
God.
Yeah. Or like the day after we lose 5-2 at Forest Green, that'd have been super.
No one had listened to it.
Talk about negativity.
It'd just be too negative. No,
we'll show you negativity.
Yeah.
So really hope Cambridge win one of the next two games, otherwise it's going to carry on, go downhill. Yeah. In the third part, guys, we're going to talk a little bit about a player signing a new contract, have your questions, and of course we're going to look at some football gender.
Go on, you fucking bag of shit.
Right, now on to the third part, which is any other business and games round. Giovanni Brown signed a new one-year contract. That's good, isn't it?
It's nice to have a bit of good news, more than anything.
Brilliant, yet very surprising news. I wasn't expecting it.
Well, it's only a year.
Yeah, just a year. He's on his way up, and he surely will be a League One, maybe even Championship player. You know, the sky's the limit for him.
If he continues his form.
Yeah.
Tom made a very good point. Imagine when they sit down to try and sort out George Maris's contract. That's going to be a very short conversation. Yeah.
Hi, George. Fancy another couple of years?
Nah.
Not really.
No, I'm all right. Thanks for coming.
I had a question. If the choice was to extend Brown, Halliday and perhaps even Maris's contract, or sign another striker and defender, what would your choice be?
Hell, that's like
who
so
the hell
choice.
Put that question in?
I've just ripped that off the message board. So nice one, Rosa one. Stealing
Rosa.
That.
Well, it all depends on who the striker and the defender is, doesn't it? Really.
Well, that's part of the risk, isn't it? You're.
Oh, so yeah, it's just a guess.
Wait, No. The question is, would you extend those three, or would you sign a new defender and a new striker?
Right, but we've still got Halliday, Maris and Giovanni until the end of the year.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd sign a new one because I don't think they'll sign new contracts anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. I thought you meant it'd be an instant trade-off, so we'd lose those three now for the other two.
Okay.
But that, yeah.
Well, how about that question then?
Yeah.
Well, no, it put us in a worse position losing.
I think that's three of them. I would probably just bring another couple of guys in. Like, we've extended Giovanni Brown's contract.
Yeah.
CC's pretty happy to say Maris. I don't think we'll sign. I don't think Halliday will either. So.
Good, straight back to pessimism.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Simple as that.
Do you know what? It'd be really nice if we just won a couple of, like, if we could win a game the day before
recording a podcast. Yeah. Yeah.
We beat Notts County, and then during that week, we got battered by Cheltenham and then lost again. It's like, I want to be positive. I really want to be positive. Yeah, yeah. I want to come off the back of a bit of positivity, but yeah. Yeah, good news at Giovanni, so I know that is positive. As we say, like, his rise has been pretty sensational, really. Like, he's just adapted to it absolutely straight away. Looks probably, like, so comfortable. Looks like he's been doing this for a long time, much longer, like, professional football than what he has been. So, yeah, good to have him, and hopefully we can have him for a bit longer as well.
Yeah, just nice to maybe avoid the whole Uche situation where you lose your players and you don't get anything for it. So hopefully extending Brown means that we might be able to sell him on at some point, get a bit of money.
Good stuff. You might have noticed that we glossed over a game in the week, Southend, the trip to Southend on Tuesday, losing 3-1. We don't like that competition.
No. I also,
I don't want to sit here and just, like, launch into a 10-minute tirade.
But you're gonna.
I'm gonna let Barry Corr, who completely wholeheartedly agrees with us.
Yeah.
Obviously, it would have been his homecoming at Southend. He's got a concussion, so didn't play. And his quote, I don't know if anyone saw this, an interview with the Southend Echo. There's a back-to-play protocol you have to follow, and the game might just come a little bit too soon, which is really, really annoying for me. But saying that, I don't think anybody would be there anyway, because nobody goes to these games. It wouldn't be much of a homecoming, but it would still be great to be involved. And if I am, then I will go and shake hands with all 20 of the fans, because it won't take much time at all.
That just sums it up perfectly.
The rest of that interview is brilliant, by the way, so yeah. I would very much recommend checking that out. Just search Barry Corr on Google News and I'm sure it'll come up. It's quite an important line to draw, though, because about this competition, and it's one that I don't think we've really discussed in any detail. Mm. Obviously, like, again, we started recording this in February. We were long gone then, so there was no point really discussing it. But it's a competition which obviously has raised a lot of controversy, rightly so. But the line that I want to draw is that the reason that we don't talk about this game, we don't want to kind of buy in or cover that competition in any great detail, it's not because we don't rate the competition as kind of what it is. It's because of the fact that it contains, like, B teams and stuff. Like, if it was still the JPT, we'd talk about it. You know,
yeah.
if it was what it was when we got promoted, of course we'd talk about it. Like,
the LDV bands, like when we went to Cardiff,
I'd have gone to Southend on Tuesday, 100%.
Yeah, of course.
If it was just a League One, League Two competition, fine. But even in the format that it's in, fine.
It's the fact that it so clearly represents, like, they're just trying to get their foot in the door, aren't they?
Yeah.
Into the league structure, and that really would be the death of it for me. Like, just the integrity of it all, like, it's just terrible.
Integrity is the word.
And I think the flip side as well is, I don't think it benefits the under-21 players at the Southamptons and whatever clubs are in it by playing a couple of games against, you know, League One or League Two. Like, it'd be better for those players to develop if the league had stricter rules about Prem clubs and Championship clubs having more homegrown players in their matchday squads, or making it easier to loan players out and not expect clubs to play them every game. And I think there are better ways to develop young players.
Yeah, like, the sentiment behind it is developing young players.
This is exactly the thing, though, isn't it? Like, if they want to develop their players, develop them. Develop them the way that we develop our players. Send them out on loan, get them some experience, play them in your first team. Don't try and ruin lower league competition because you want to get your players a couple of games a season. Like, it just, and we tweeted about this as well during the week. We made this quite clear, like, we don't like the competition, we don't like what it stands for, we don't like what it represents. And someone replied to it, I can't remember who it was, and that they're very much entitled to their opinion. If you want to go to these games, you do. And it was something to the effect of, oh, well, you should be supporting the club at all times. Like, no, not at all. They voted for this competition. We're more, in my opinion, I'd like us to lose every game in this competition, go out of it as early as possible, and just be done with it, like we were last season. Because it's a real shit show of a competition, isn't it?
This was another game that they've all played.
Yeah.
It's another 90 minutes in the legs, yeah.
I mean, Southend don't want it. We don't want it. No one cares. Just take it back to what it was. Like, either scrap it, or modify it in a way which is good, basically. Like,
exactly.
So, yeah, just wanted to clear that up.
That was good. That was, like, hard-hitting journalism rather than hard. jokey podcast.
It's just a shame because we had some great memories with that competition. Mm. You know, the run to getting to the final around the turn of the millennium.
The Millennium Stadium as well.
Yeah.
Linkage.
Going down to Cardiff.
It'd be really interesting to see what happens.
The Bristol City, like, semi-final. Yeah.
It'd be really interesting to see what happens if one of the B teams would make it to the final.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't think that's going to happen.
It's a real shame from that kind of angle, isn't it? That I think the final was in the last year. I think there was Coventry against Oxford. I think there's
that was like 70,000, yeah.
And then the final last year, I think, was Shrewsbury Lincoln. So again, it's like 40,000 plus.
Well, it was Lincoln's first ever time at Wembley, so.
Yeah, and it absolutely, like, and obviously the shite up the road, obviously they take it seriously, don't they?
Yeah.
Anything they can do to get themselves in the news, they'll do.
Yeah, of course.
And they smash up the grain and hop store. Yeah. That happened last season.
Yeah. Idiots. Oh. Scumbags. Anyway, moving on, we're going to do a couple of questions, I think, from the Twitter, Tom.
Yeah, I have indeed. Thanks very much for all your questions again. Again, people contributing to, you know, a lot of times. It's always good to see. With regards to questions that we've been sent, I do think that we've spoken about a lot of them during the podcast already.
Sure.
So I don't know how much detail there is going over our thoughts on the flat 4-4-2 or, all the rest of it, who we need to sign, what we need, because we've done it to death. But thank you very much anyway for sending them in. One question we did get sent in, which I think we really do need to address in quite great detail and quite urgently, because it was a bit of an aberration. We were asked, can we talk about the shocking skip attempts at half time? Jack, you took part in the Mick George skip challenge at half time, and you did appallingly.
No, three things, a number of things, right? I get there. It's been raining all night. Conditions were terrible.
It's the same for everyone there. It's the same for everyone there.
Level playing field.
Yeah, and
mine were definitely the 11 and 13 year olds complaining about the.
And then I got there. Megan, the lovely lady from Cambridge United, then was like, "Oh, we've actually changed it. We're moving it back to make it harder. So this is the first time it's been further away." I was like, "Nice one."
Yeah, I didn't like the new format.
No, it was annoying. But my first attempt went slightly left and beyond, and my second attempt dropped just short.
I've got a video of it. It's filmed from the NRE, so it is quite poor.
I've got a video from the Habin. Maybe we could stick it on.
Yeah,
we'll stick it on Twitter.
Yeah, I think Clark has got a video from the South Stand as well, so we can have like a surround sound of my failure. You know,
the best thing was I remember when you told us that you were doing it, and I was like, all right, I better ask him about it when I see him in the game. You turned up with your boots.
Yeah,
you actually wore boots to do it.
Boots.
In.
Yeah,
right.
What?
Right, listen, right. Because I wear shoes.
I think it's a good idea.
I can't go home in my shoes. I'll stack it. So I brought my boots in my bag, changed into them.
Did the two kids who also did it, did they like whip out like a pair of copper mendials like Puma Kings or something?
I don't know what they were wearing. One of them stacked it. That's all I know.
I was disappointed that you didn't wear full kit. That would have made my day.
Yeah, I could have done. And then Marvin again got a bit handsy with me afterwards again.
You can't start rumours like that on the pod.
Well, no, we just have a weird relationship with Marvin. Marvin just like picks me out and always comes up to me and freaks me out.
Just moosing around.
Yeah, moosing around. It was a good day, and
we've got to try and push to be on that. Like, we've got to be like a regular.
We all sat here and laughed, but
it should have been the three of us. Where was I?
I know. Yeah. Oh. I think we could do like a Abistan pod thing. They mentioned the podcast over the tannoy when announcing my name.
And then everyone rushed back from getting their burgers and, oh, he's doing it.
Yeah. Quite a few autographs. Anyway, Tom, give us a bit more detail on your bet of the week this week.
Yeah, they went badly. Mm. I'll be honest. As we said, we started this kind of new feature, I guess. I bet every week for every game that Cambridge play. The first one was done by us. Myself, I picked it. It was to do with cards and corners and all the rest of it. Didn't go very well, not at all. So we opened the floor out, to our loyal listeners. Tom King sent us one in, so that's what we did on Saturday against Carlisle. It was for Richie Bennett and George Marish to score. Richie Bennett scored, but George Marish didn't. So that's pretty. That's solid, isn't it? That
the trust is still desperate for money.
Yeah. As we say, we're going to keep doing this. So the floor's open. Send us in your suggestions, your tips for Saturday.
Something around 4-0 Colchester or something like that. We'll get a few of them in.
A couple of handicaps in there, something like that. Obviously, any kind of profit that we make, go straight back to the Cambridge United Community Trust. Good to kind of help them out a little bit because they do some cracking work. There are a few things that kind of put doing the rounds on social media last week, week before that, like about some of the work they've been doing, which has got kind of national headlines and national press, which is very good. So you know, anything that anyone can do to kind of help support that is good, and it's a bit of fun as well. So.
Yeah. Good stuff. What those contact details again, quickly, Tom?
AbbeyStandPod on Twitter, AbbeyStandPod@gmail.com on the emails, and just search us on Facebook as well, and you'll find us there.
Good stuff. Just before we do the dreaded football Jenga, a bit of news on the Fantasy League.
So I'm not actually top anymore, which is, I mean, that's the main.
Blimey, who's top?
Oliver Brunskill or Olivier Brunskill. I don't know if that's a spelling error.
Olivier.
French listeners as well. Dan Lynch second, Courtney Pettifor third, friend of the pod Josh Hunt fourth, joint fourth with three others.
Wow. Kind
of crazy. Let me just scroll down, try to find Jack, probably the next page.
I think I might be bottom.
Oh, there you are. Jordan's 60th, Josh Parker's 59th. That's going well. Jack, you're 74th. Fourth bottom.
Quite like your name, though, Jack. GDPR Rovers.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's give him.
So it's going well. I mean, you can still join. There's a code that we tweeted a while back. You can find that. Join. There's over 75 people in there. The winner will get some sort of UTAS branded tat.
Yeah.
Some shitty mug.
An actual tattoo.
The tat. Yeah. Under the Abbey Stand tattoo done by me. That'd be weird. Good stuff. Right, we're going to move on to football Jenga now. I want to put a disclaimer out there, okay? I want to open this to the floor in my own way. So if you go to @SwindleHurstJ on Twitter, and you can direct message me your suggestions for football Jenga, because it fills me with dread every week having to try and think of a game that's like appropriate and not too long ago, not too recent.
And that isn't Cambridge Gateshead.
And that isn't Cambridge Gateshead. But here we are, again. 2018 is the year that we're in now. April of this year, Manchester United beat Tottenham Hotspur 2-1 in the FA Cup semi-final.
Right. That's a tough one, Jesus.
I mean, it is a tough one, but I believe in you guys, okay? So, how it works is, everyone has a guess, take turns, and as soon as you get one wrong, you are out. And so, let the battle commence. Right, so, Jordan, as our guest, you get to go first. You've done this before.
Poorly.
Get the ball rolling.
David De Gea.
Correct.
Okay, Harry Kane.
Yep.
Dele Alli.
Yep.
Christian Eriksen.
Yep.
Romelu Lukaku. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Eric Dyer.
Yep.
Valencia for Man United.
Yep.
Jan Vertonghen.
Yep.
Davinson Sanchez.
Very good.
Danny Rose.
Danny Rose is a no. I'm sorry. Ben Davis at left back.
Well, why would
he's
that?
Not been named.
You are bad at it, mate. You are bad. Right, so Ben Davies is
that's
on. We did this last week as well. We did this last week.
No, right, that's gone. Ben Davies gone. Right, yeah. Anthony Martial.
No.
Nope.
He scored. That was in the league game that he scored.
Unused substitute on the bench.
So
Judy.
Tom to win.
Yeah.
He's
got a name one.
Just got a name one. Otherwise, you're back in, are you?
You're
making these rules up as you go.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Developing the game.
Oh, right, one player. Hugo Lloris.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. That's not right.
What? Was it Vorm?
Michel Vorm, yeah.
You've done it again.
This needs to stop happening. Okay, right, so I'm back in.
Right, yeah. So Vorm and Davis play. We both know that. Sorry, everyone. So, Junior, back in.
Okay. I'm scared it's been said. Matic.
It hasn't been said, and he did play.
Oh, well done.
Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Bloody of course.
A little pause. It's really
worried me.
Okay, Jesse Lingard.
Yep.
Did he score?
Sorry?
Did Lingard score?
He's stalling.
No.
No, he's trying to get Jack to say another one.
Yeah, I know. trying to weed a bit of more information out of you. What about Toby Alderweireld?
He was injured. Oh, no, he wasn't. He was on the bench, but he didn't come on. Okay. So, Julian, to win for the second week in a row, I think,
yeah,
you have to get one more player.
Marcus Rashford.
You know, I don't like him.
Yeah.
He came on.
That was a good football Jenga. Apologies for my idiocy on keeping naming the players after they were mistakenly named, but it was a good football Jenga. It's been a good podcast.
Surprisingly.
It's going to be a good September.
Yeah, it is. I mean, with all the negativity, we've sprinkled a little bit of positivity in there, and, you know, we'll be back in 2 weeks when Cambridge have beaten Colchester and Mansfield. Julian, thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Tom, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And our special guest, Jordan Warland, thanks for coming in again, mate.
Anytime, boys.
Tune in next time.